is The End User, episode 98 for Friday, June 15th, VisiMac. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am Ozymandias, King of Kings. No, just kidding. I'm Taylor Marr. And I'm very excited this week because there are lots of new MacBooks. Chris, you heard about this, right?
What? Did they have an event or something?
Well, yeah, it's a big event for their developers.
I didn't even notice.
San Francisco.
People on Twitter weren't even talking about it.
Well, I'm excited, even though I'm probably not going to buy any of them. I mean, they're just that exciting. So first, they came out with some new MacBook Airs. They look the same, but they've got some great new features. You know, they got that Ivy Bridge processors that we've been talking about. They have HD FaceTime cameras, finally. That's pretty great. They claimed last time that they couldn't get the camera small enough to fit into the Air case, but now it's in there.
Nonsense. They always say stuff like that, and then they have to take it back later because turns out technology advances over time, so you can do that kind of thing.
So it's got USB 3.0, Thunderbolt, like it had before, and a new MagSafe connector that is slightly thinner. I guess they decided they're going to have to make it thinner at some point, and they just did it. If you have the old MagSafe chargers, you can buy an adapter for $10, which is unfortunate, but that's the way things are, and that's the way the world works. Then they did the same thing for their MacBook Pros. They updated them, gave them some new chips, some new hardware, but they kept the same design. But then, at the last second, they released a new MacBook Pro that they just called the next generation MacBook Pro.
The new MacBook.
But this one has a Retina display. They dropped the hard drive. They went solid state only. So it's they dropped over a pound off of the weight. And they completely re-engineered the design. They added some really cool heat vents and these asymmetrical fans that reduce the perceived noise of the fans when they're spinning when you're working. And that carried over to the MacBook Air as well. They put the asymmetrical fans in there. Did you realize that, Chris?
Yeah, that's really cool. That's a really cool idea. I was trying to look into it and to see if that was just PR or not. And apparently there are a bunch of asymmetrical fans out there, but not really in laptops.
Yeah. So, but I'm bearing the lead here. The definitely killer feature of the new MacBook Pro is its Retina display. So it's a 15-inch computer. It's a 15.4-inch screen with a resolution of 2880 by 1800.
Wow. So that's pretty excellent, obviously. And
if you're not good in math, that's just four times the normal 15-inch resolution, which is 1440 by 900.
And it's still going to be that glossy finish, though, right?
Well, it's a slightly less glossy finish. I mean, it's not a matte finish, but what they did was the old MacBook Pros had... in the LCD, there was a back piece of glass and a front piece of glass and then a cover glass. And since in order to make the laptop skinnier, they built the LCD into the bezel of the computer itself. So they've removed one piece of glass and claim that they've eliminated reflectivity by 75%.
Oh, nice. I'll have to get my eyes on that because... that's something that's always bugged me about MacBooks. They're like a mirror. So I wonder if this would be a little bit better.
It never bothered me. My MacBook is actually I ordered the glossy screen as a build to order option. that was the default, and I preferred glossy.
It does look better, by the way. The glossy screen.
Another thing that improves clarity and contrast ratio is that it has that same in-plane switching technology that the iPhone and the iPad have.
Right. Yeah, IPS is the buzzword you see, right?
Right. It's not technically in-plane switching. It's another related technology, but in-plane switching is close enough. Yeah, this new computer is going to be $2,200 to start.
Ouch. Yeah, you know, I feel like they just introduced this new thing off the top, and then over time, the price will start to trickle down a little bit. But, you know, you get a new, brand new laptop with brand new components, with a brand new Retina display, and with a brand new case, you know, that thing's going to be expensive. It's the early adopter tax.
Right. Well, this is their top-of-the-line computer, and Apple's known for making expensive computers. So I think we're going to see this computer maintain in some form or another, you know, $2,000 or above. And then, but we're going to start to see some of these technologies trickle down into the cheaper computers. That's what we're hoping for.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. It's an early adopter tax.
Right. So all of these computers are already available. The folks at iFixit love to take apart these computers as soon as they come out. And they took apart the MacBook Pro. And so many people came to see it that it crashed their website. For an hour and a half. But what they discovered is that if you are looking to upgrade your new next generation MacBook Pro, don't bother. So you can't even replace the battery. They've glued it into the case.
Well, and this is the way things are going, right? I mean, a computer as an appliance, you know, you don't typically go under the hood of your car to, you know, make small adjustments to the motor. So why would you do that with a computer? This thing should be like a toaster.
Yeah, $2,200 toaster. Sure.
Yeah, maybe that's the issue. $2,200 toaster.
Well, but that's just the way it goes. But here's my tip for you: if you're going to go out and buy the next generation MacBook Pro, get Apple Care, because you are definitely not fixing this thing yourself.
Yeah, well, at least without a solder gun, which is really scary.
No, I don't think a solder gun will even help you in most cases.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can replace the hard drive. That is still a socketed hard drive, although it's completely proprietary.
Yeah, but you could go in there with the solder gun and, like, unsolder the components off the board.
I suppose you could, yeah, but that's, like you said, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend
just,
anyone doing
just
that.
Just don't do that level.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, by the way, I broke my $2,200 brand new MacBook by taking a solder gun to it. That's a bad idea. Yeah, so we've got the link to the iFixit article in there. It's pretty cool. I love seeing the insides of these things.
Yeah, especially Apple computers. They have pretty insides as well as outsides. They talked about a bunch of things on Monday as they released this these new computers. So one of the pieces is a preview of iOS 6. So they have, as we predicted last week, gotten rid of Google Maps for their map program. They're using a combination of companies that they bought to produce maps and 3D flyovers, which will only be available on the latest iPad and iPhone, as well as turn-by-turn directions, which is something that you could get for a long time on third-party map apps for iOS, but now Siri can navigate you.
Yeah, like Waze was the one I always heard about being pretty good for turn-by-turn. But yeah, so now it's built in, just like it should be. You know, that's a feature that a modern smartphone should have. So it's good that they're getting that. And by the way, this looks like the slickest turn-by-turn I've seen on a phone yet.
Yeah, it certainly does look pretty slick. A couple of the other new features they are announcing. Siri is learning some new tricks. She's going to be able to respond to a lot more commands. Maybe they'll even bring her out of beta.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens when they actually release this. Do we have a date, or do they just say later?
When iOS 6 comes out?
Yes.
They said the fall, but no specific date. Probably it'll coincide with the next iPhone.
Yeah.
It always does. So Facebook is getting full system integration like they did with Twitter last year.
Nice. Yeah, and that's a really nice help with syncing your contact photos and stuff like that. I wouldn't
if they do that well, I would be excited to have that.
If they sync your entire address book, run away scared. That's not a good way of doing things. But the selective sync where you just grab the photo and maybe some phone numbers and information for what you already have in your address book is a good way of doing it.
Oh, yeah, I would really like that. That would be fun.
Yeah, and that's how Android and Windows Phone do it currently. Or at least you have the option to do it that way. So good. I see a lot of hate on the internet at large about Like, oh, you know, they finally got Facebook. And it's like, yeah, it furthers the platform. And like, why does anyone care that Android had it first? What does it matter at all?
I don't know. Anyway, so iCloud is getting some updates, some improvements, mostly in order to sync with the new features of Mountain Lion, which we'll talk about next. But then they introduced this new app called Passbook. And it seems to me this is trying to be an Apple-flavored solution to Google Wallet. What do you think about this, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little weird because I'm not sure that Apple has the kind of clout to do something like Google Wallet.
I think they definitely have the clout in terms of app share, and they're not trying to be as far-reaching as replacing your whole wallet, right?
Yeah,
but they're trying to replace your customer savings cards, your gift cards, tickets, passes, just all the stuff that you were using paper for, you know, some sort of cardboard. You can replace that. You still have to bring your wallet. Although a lot of people are starting to speculate that the real killer feature is going to be Passbook with RFID in the next generation iPhone.
You mean RFID?
RFID.
Or NFC.
NFC. One of those two.
Yeah. they're all very similar, and it's acronym salad. But yeah, NFC. And that's what Google Wallet tried to do, too. And I don't see the little Google Wallet signs in just about anywhere. So I don't know. We'll have to see. I do like the idea of replacing the customer care cards and that kind of thing. And I actually use an app to do that on Windows Phone, CardStar. They're also on iPhone. I'm sure you've seen them around.
Yeah, I know. I've tried that app, and it works sometimes, although I have so few of those cards that I generally just bring the cards because I get fewer dirty looks from cashiers.
Right.
But I think with Passbook, it'll be able to do a similar thing, and it'll sort of develop some more momentum. And I think even Google Wallet and even third-party apps like you were talking about will benefit from just a small culture change of people using their phones more to pay and interact with businesses.
Yeah, and I definitely... The idea of having a little tablet that you can use instead of paper is a really good idea, but at the same time, I also think we're a long way from having that be the case.
Right, absolutely. And I think it's just fits and starts here, and I think Passbook may be a good approach to just sort of introducing that market and get people using their phones for this sort of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway, Apple's preview of Mountain Lion, which is officially coming out in July. My guess, July 30th.
July 30th. Okay, I'm going to say July 31st.
Okay, yeah, definitely a Monday or a Tuesday. anyway, some really cool new features in that. We already knew about some of the iCloud integration features. I've been testing out their Messages app, which integrates with iMessage on your iPhone, which I think is really fun. But then they're going to start syncing notes, and they're going to start syncing reminders, which currently you have to do through your calendar, which is a pain in the butt. But I guess the coolest feature to me that they are announcing is something called PowerNap, which will automatically update your computer while the computer is sleeping.
Yeah, so it just wakes it up and does its thing and goes back to sleep?
Right. So does Windows have stuff like that?
I think it's manufacturer specific.
Ah, okay. Well, I think so is this.
Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, you can even do stuff like wake on LAN and turn it off completely until it gets the magic packet, and then it wakes up and does whatever it does.
Right.
But yeah, it's not something that is that integrated unless the manufacturer does it, I'm pretty sure.
Right. So here's Mountain Lion comes with 200 other new features, but here's the really great news. It's only $20. It's only $20, and that is you pay once and it can upgrade all of your computers. They said it flat out. Pay once, upgrade all your computers. Here's the better news. If you didn't upgrade to Lion, you can jump right from Snow Leopard to Lion, you know, as long as you have that app store.
Yeah, and that's a pretty nice way of doing things. You know, it's funny because Microsoft makes their money off of the software, where Apple makes their money off of the hardware, so they can't really afford to do that kind of thing.
Right. So aside from that, not mentioned on Monday's keynote, but a couple of other new products did come out from Apple. They released a smart case that goes on the back of your iPad. You know, you already had the smart cover for the front, and now they're adding an extra component, which is $50. It's absurd. I mean, get it if you really like Apple stuff, but I mean, man, you're talking about $80 just to cover your iPad.
Yeah, just to put some felt around it, basically.
Right. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, this is it's a polyurethane hard shell on the back here, so it probably will protect your iPad, but you can find one cheaper than $50. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, and I wish they would just make the iPad more durable as opposed to clamoring this case onto it. But I guess they have to make it super thin.
Yeah, it is pretty durable. I mean, aside from all the glass. But
right.
People still want to buy cases. I mean, but everybody who had the iPad 2 or the iPad 3, 90% or more were going without a case up until now. And so it is pretty durable. I doubt all that many of those have broken.
People
still want cases. People are used to getting cases, especially with the iPhone 4 and 4S.
Yeah, and that old smart cover didn't really do the trick. You know, it only covered the front, and it's a little weird.
Well, but so this new case is designed to work with the smart cover. And actually, the smart cover is fantastic, but it doesn't protect
the device. Yeah, it protects the screen, not the device. Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah. If you drop it on a corner, the smart cover is not likely to prevent the glass from breaking. It's not going to prevent scratches on the back at all. So here is another thing that Apple released that I'm going to advise you not buy is the new Mac Pro. It's been well over 2 years since they updated the Mac Pro. But now that they've updated, it's still out of date.
What chipset did they put in it?
So they used the Westmere EP Xeon server chips, which is the last generation Xeon chips. Also, the graphics card did not upgrade at all, so it is now a three-year-old graphics card.
You think they're aiming this at server people?
I think they are aiming this at a stopgap, supposedly, according to a few emails and press releases from Apple. They are working on a major revision to the Mac Pro that is a long time coming. So this is if you absolutely have to buy a Mac Pro between now and 2013.
Yeah, and the article mentions that the case hasn't changed in 10 years, and that's exactly right, isn't it? Those old Mac Pros look exactly the same as they do today.
Well, I mean, the internals of the case have changed. They've been tinkering with it to make it easier to swap out components and fiddle with things and add new hard drives and graphics cards and things like that. You can actually add your own new graphics cards. But yeah, the outside of the case has changed very, very little.
Yeah, they're not going to glue down the SSD or anything?
No, nothing like that. There are no glued down SSDs. There are no soldered SSDs in any Apple product.
Oh, that's right. That was the one exception that I thought of in the new MacBook Pro. It's the only thing that wasn't glued down, right?
That's right. Yeah, that wasn't glued or soldered.
I picked the wrong component.
Well, actually, another piece that is that's socketed, not soldered, is the Wi-Fi card. So I wonder if it is going to eventually be possible to swap it out for an 802.11ac. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Whoa, yeah, gigabit Wi-Fi. I'd love it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it might be great if at least one of Apple's new computers had something faster than 802.11n, but they didn't. Anyway, so one more big thing, or not so big thing, came out this week from Apple, and that is a new Airport Express. Now, I had one of these.
Yeah, they're awesome.
For 4 years until it died, and it just sometimes they die. And actually, the power management was rather difficult when they had to design a router to plug directly into the wall. And so their new one is it looks just like the Apple TV, but it's white. So it's a hockey puck instead of a wall wart.
So what do you get out of the Airport Express?
So you get AirPlay, so you can stream music, no video, but just music.
And it just has a little stereo headset or a stereo out.
Yeah, headphones jack. That's right. And the new one has an Ethernet out as well as an Ethernet in. So the old one, you used to be able to plug it into your router, but then everything was wireless after that. So now you can go router, Wi-Fi, and Ethernet. It also has a USB port, which can connect to any USB printer and some USB hard drives.
Yeah, you've got the network attack storage option there.
Right. But so the big new feature, which is it was already available for all airport routers, but the new feature that they're advertising here is that you can set it up and tinker with it, you know, change the settings on the router from anywhere. They have a Mac app, a PC app, and an iOS app.
So does it sync against your Apple ID or something like that?
Yeah, it does. And so there are a couple of little different iCloud tweaks that you can add in there as well.
Cool. So I guess it does all the NAT traversal for you since you have the, or probably maybe even tunnels to it since it has the ID to sync on.
Right. Apple has all its own protocols for that, so I don't know exactly what any of that means.
Yeah. Well, the Airport Express I thought was always the best device that no one ever used from Apple.
Well, I used it and I loved it.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Although it was not big enough. It was not powerful enough to cover my house. Oh, that's the other thing. The new Airport Express has dual band Wi-Fi, so it can broadcast in 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz simultaneously, which is always nice. You got to have that.
Yeah, that is nice because what you always end up doing is you flip on the 5 gigahertz and then you realize that your Wii doesn't support it and then you have to roll back.
Yeah, your Wii and your phone and
yeah, that's going to be the big sticking point with something like 802.11ac. You just those phones are never going to do it. Not for a not for a long time.
So some people, in fact, use Airport Express as not even as their router, but they'll just use it as portable music players. You know, they'll set up 5 in their house and play music wirelessly in all different rooms.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's like a little...
It's still, even if you buy 5 Airport Expresses, it's still cheaper than Sonos.
Right, yeah. And it's a nice little box. Those things are cool. And you can also use it, like you said, with the network attack storage. You can have like a pseudo server using that thing. Like you could you could plug in a terabyte drive in there and use it as a pseudo server. Is that a word?
You're better off using the time capsule or something for that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Or you could just get one of those Mac Pros we were talking about and get a real server.
Or you can buy Mac Mini Server Edition.
Yeah, that's another good option.
Right, and much cheaper.
Yeah, those Mac Minis are still pretty cool. What chipset does the Mac Mini have now? They didn't update it, did they?
They have not yet updated it, no. So it's running Sandy Bridge right now. But they have, they do have an official server edition with the top of the line Sandy Bridge Core i7. So I think they stuffed a quad core in there.
Yeah, nice. That's a good little box there. I wonder, do you know how big the hard drive can be on there?
There's room in the case for 2.5-inch hard drives. So if you get 2 terabyte drives, you could put 2 terabytes in there.
Nice, that's not so bad.
Yeah, that was their major advantage of taking out the optical drive from those Mac Minis. Although they don't really advertise that you can put an extra drive in there.
Yeah, and they took the optical drive out, and people freaked out about it. But what do you need an optical drive for anymore, right?
Right.
It's dead, unless it's Blu-ray maybe, and you're using it in a home theater situation, but. That's the only use case I could even see for those things.
I just had a thought. Do you think the next generation iMacs will be optical drive free?
I don't see why not.
That'll be interesting, won't it? People will freak out all over again.
Yeah, we'll have to see. You know, it's like when they move to USB and they remove the floppy disk, right? This is the next step.
People were so mad. But then they made that ad with Jeff Goldblum and everybody was happy again. Do you remember that ad?
Yeah.
There's no step three. There's no step three. Okay, well, that's all I have from WWDC and Apple this week. So should we turn on the afterburners or do you have anything else you want to go over first?
No, that sounds good. Let's turn on the afterburners. So it looks like Microsoft is releasing an iOS and Android app for Xbox Live. It's going to be called My Xbox Live, and you can have a look at your account and manage your points and stuff like that. So they're going cross-platform with this Xbox thing. This maybe is their play.
Yeah, we saw this. They were announcing the...
Smart Glass.
The Smart Glass was going to be iOS and Android as well, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was. So, okay. This is one step further. Nice. And now, it's available today.
Oh, great. Maybe I'll try it out with my brother's Xbox or something. So Sony, we talked about a few months ago, they broke up with Ericsson, but they were going to keep making phones under the Sony label, and they're finally releasing their first U.S. Sony-branded Xperia phone on AT&T. It's the Xperia Ion. It looks pretty awesome, but it's only running Android 2.3.
Boo! There's no reason to be releasing a new phone with Android 2.3 anymore. There's no excuse for that.
Right.
But I do like the brushed aluminum back on it. It's kind of nice looking. Yeah.
Now, in other Android 2.3 news, and also some Apple news. Now, I don't know if you realize this, Chris, but since the iPhone was first released, it has been the top-selling smartphone on every carrier it's available on every quarter since it was released.
Sure, yeah.
Up until this past quarter on Verizon, they sold more Razer Maxes than iPhones.
Well, and also, it's a little
as
unfair.
Well. They should. That's a pretty good Android phone.
Yeah, and also, it's a little unfair to the iPhone too, and because the thing is starting to get a little stale, right? And the Droid Razer Max, it's the worst name.
well, the Droid Razer Max came out before the latest iPhone, and they're selling three different models of iPhone. What do you say to that, Chris?
Well, yeah.
I'm sticking up for the Razer Max, and you're sticking up for the iPhone.
Yeah, I guess it's backwards day or something. So speaking of Verizon, they're also releasing the details on their shared data plans that they've been so keen to announce. And go have a look. We've got a link in the show notes for all of the details. But basically, you pay a base fee for having your device on the network, and then you pay extra on top of that for the data plan that you can share amongst the devices. So that's kind of an interesting strategy. And like I said, go have a look at the show notes if you need the details.
Yeah, I mean, Verizon and all the other major carriers have always been about saving money through the bigger plans you get.
Yeah.
And this is just another iteration of that. I think it's good that they are going to rip people off slightly less.
Yeah, I like the way you put that.
Although, if it means giving up your unlimited data plan, I'm sure that is something you won't ever want to do, Chris.
Cold, dead hands, Taylor. Cold, dead hands.
All right. Well, Amazon has been selling music for a while, and then they are partnered tightly with Android, and people have been able to access their Amazon Music purchases in the cloud on Android for a while. Finally, it's available for iPhone. So it's the Amazon Cloud Player, and if you aren't using iTunes Match or Google Music, then and you've been buying music from Amazon, then this is the app for you.
Yeah, and the only thing I don't like about the Amazon Cloud Service is that their upload syncing application is an Adobe Air app, which just irritates me because I don't want Adobe Air installed.
Yeah, I don't have Adobe Air installed either. I figure, it's going to reach critical mass at some point or another, probably.
Just a side note before we move on to the next afterburner. I logged into my Amazon Music the other day, and it said, at the top, it says how much space you have on Amazon Music. It said, "Hello, Chris Barnes," or whatever it says. You have unlimited space for music. I didn't realize that was an option.
Pretty sweet.
Pretty cool.
You should test them on it.
Yeah, I should. I should just make a bunch of unique copies of songs and upload them and see what happens. How unlimited is that unlimited? So anyway, on with the afterburners. Vizio is launching some PCs, and we talked about this a while back. What was that, CES?
Yes, I think it was CES.
So they're launching a couple all-in-one desktops, like iMac-like desktops, and a couple Ultrabooks and one larger mainstream 15.5-inch laptop. And I gotta say, these things look pretty interesting, surprisingly interesting for a laptop from a TV maker.
Yeah, I agree. I think they look really good. But then Vizio TVs always looked pretty good, especially for the price. And these guys seem to know what they're doing, hardware engineering wise. So they look like they could be great. But you know, it's all about the usability, right?
Yeah, and we'll see. The one that's most interesting to me is their Ultrabook, and that's the CT14. So we'll have to see if they're successful with consumers. I think if they're cheap enough, they will be, right? That's their right. play.
Yeah, that would be awesome if you got one of these. People would look at it, just like they used to look at Macs.
Look at what? A cockeyed, yeah.
A Vizio? It looks like a Mac.
Is that a Mac made by Vizio? Is that a Mac Vizio?
A Visimac?
A Visimac? Yes, that's better. I like that one.
Okay, well, that's the last afterburner, we can turn off the afterburners, and then, we can keep talking about Vizio if you want to, Chris.
No, that's okay. They're making PCs. I gotta check them out.
Right. Full HD displays, that is always a super important thing to me. Gotta have a high-resolution display on your computer.
Yeah, definitely.
It's the future.
But no Retina display.
Well, a Retina display is preferable, but expensive.
Yeah, it's also not $2,200, right?
Right. Yeah, their Ultrabook is going to start at under $900.
Yeah, that's right. It's it's $900, basically. I hate when they take a dollar off and they say, oh, we're under, you know,
but
X
they
amount.
They took $2 off, Chris.
Well, they took two, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also
so now you have to say it's under $900.
There's also some research showing that if you make the number 7, people are more likely to think it's under the price that you're $3 away from. That's the magic number.
The magic number is a random number.
Now, the magic number is 42, but that's okay.
No, that's just the answer.
Oh, right, that's the answer. Yeah, okay. I get these mixed up sometimes. So ICANN has released its custom top-level domain.
Ooh, good segue, Chris.
Oh, good segue. That was more like an afterburner-style segue.
Yeah.
These things are interesting because it can be dot whatever you want. It can be whatever you want dot whatever you want. In fact, I'm going to register that right now. But just like in the early days when people were looking to buy all the domain names, like I think the all three-letter combination of domain names are snapped up.
Yeah, of course. I think all four-letter are snapped up.
Yeah, I think if not all four-letter, then very close. So all the companies are kind of scrambling around trying to get at their top-level domains so that they can get like .xbox. And my favorite, I'm waiting for google.google. I really want to do that.
And then they could have google.google.google, right?
Because they could, yeah. Yeah, they could have three of them in there if they really wanted to.
Right. Apple.apple.
Yep. And Apple only bought Apple.apple. Or sorry, .apple.
Yeah, sure.
I want to go to http://.. No, they probably can't afford one of these things. They're really, really expensive.
Yeah, they are. And so it is $25,000 a year just for the upkeep.
Yeah, and I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who gets what and like all the generics, like book. Amazon is going after .book, and they're in like a period of review right now. So it's kind of interesting to see who gets those generic ones.
So Amazon applied for a handful, Microsoft applied for 11, and Google applied for over 100.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they got money to throw around.
Guess so.
And Facebook notably applied for 0. They didn't even bother.
They got other things on their mind, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess if somebody gets .Facebook, they can make some kind of trademark claim anyway. So they kind of figure.
So it's interesting to read through this list and kind of think about what these companies have planned for the future, right? But nothing's really going to happen on this for a while.
Oh, not really. And if you have a lot of cash, you can get .mar or something.
Right. That would be interesting. I wonder if any individuals have applied for their own top level domains.
Yeah, you could get you could do all kinds of funky email combinations with a custom TLD.
Oh, if you were just Chris at Barnes, how cool would that be?
Yeah, I could do Chris at me.barnes or something.
I don't think you'd even need a dot. You have complete control over that domain.
Yeah, well, I can already do, now it's taken, but I could already, if I wanted to, do chris@barn.es.
Yeah.
Which is kind of slick, but that domain name is taken. So I guess not.
Yeah. Plus, that's very Web 2.0.
Yes, it is. Like Delicious and some of the others.
Right.
All right. Well, let's move on to our green tech story of the week. We have gigawatts
of power.
Power.
1.21 gigawatts. No, not really. Okay. So I don't always post new power plant methods, but I thought this one was just pretty crazy.
You do always read them.
Yeah, I do read a lot of them because they're very interesting to me. But so here is how this one works. It's called a thermal chimney tower. And all you do is you build a chimney. You build a big hollow tower that's open at the top. And if you build it high enough, then the height difference and the temperature difference between the bottom and the top will create a flow just from the air. The air will just begin to flow within the tower because it's colder on top and warmer on the bottom.
Right.
And so then you just put a fan in there and then you generate power.
Cool. Yeah. So,
if you build a tower that's wide enough and tall enough, 3,000 feet.
Wow.
Then you can generate a maximum of 1.5 gigawatts.
So people complain about windmills being ugly on the horizon, let alone a 3,000-foot tower. But
I could sort of understand the arguments about windmills being loud or killing birds, and they don't really kill as many birds as people think.
Yeah, they've mitigated that.
But I don't understand anyone who says that windmills are ugly. They are awesome to look at.
I think I agree with you on that one. Now, I could also imagine some situation where you build a tower like this, but you actually put an office building in the wall of it or something like that. Is that an option? Could you have a self-powering building that's got a...
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, it would have to be, by definition, a gigantic building.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as big or bigger than the Burj Dubai, the biggest building in the world. But the that building does, in fact, have this problem, and they have to use a series of airlocks to prevent the air going from the top to the bottom.
Oh, see, they should just use it.
Otherwise, it would create a vortex the strength of a strong tornado.
Yikes. Well, this is really cool.
So, I mean, I guess if you design the building to harness that and then build offices around the outside, that is certainly a possibility. But it's just there's not much economic incentive to build an actual habitable building that tall.
But it would be cool.
It would be very cool, yes.
Yeah, now I've also seen some buildings that use the same principle to have a passive cooling system for the humans, not to generate power.
Yeah, sure. I mean, thermal currents work on much smaller scales as well.
Yeah, like there was a building that I used to work at that had vents that had cool air coming out of them, and it was actually a passive cooling system.
Right.
It was really cool, and the way they were able to do that.
Yeah, I've seen a number of them. It's just this is the first time anyone's thought about producing a municipal amount of energy using those principles.
And if you make one of these in your municipality, you are required by law to call it the Tower of Mordor. No, I think so, right? Is that not law?
Well, you should make it a law, Chris.
I should.
It is not too late.
I should. So back to the normal. We are regressing back to the mean. Taylor, you have a tip of the week for us.
I do, and this is an iPhone-specific tip of the week. If you're like me, you don't usually have the problem of trying to mark all emails or messages as read. But if you do, and everybody does sometimes, especially if you accidentally delete an email account or on purpose delete it, and then you reinstall it, and then all of those messages are unread again, and you just want to mark them as unread, there's no actual way to do it. So you can hit edit, and then you can select each message one by one all in a row, and then hit mark all is red, but you still have to click each individual message.
Yeah,
so
that's
there's
annoying.
A hack that I learned from Lifehacker this week that's really cool. What you do is you hit edit, and then you hit one, you select one message, and then you press the mark button, but don't release it, and then uncheck that one message. And now none of the messages are checked, but you still press mark. So when you lift your finger up and you press mark, it doesn't know what to do. So when it gives you the option, you hit mark all as red, and then it just marks them all as red because it got it just got confused, and it just, that's the protocol that it goes to. So it's a neat little hack if you're ever in that position. And I definitely know lots of people who have been, and they've asked me, how do you do this? And I had no answer for them. So I hope somebody asks me again.
Yeah. Do you think Apple knows about this bug? That's the most useful bug I've ever seen.
Yeah. And you know, if it disappears in the next update of iOS, I will be really scratching my head as to what engineer did that.
Well, that's an interesting one. I'm not sure we ever had a black magic tip of the week quite like that.
Yeah, I can't remember one that sneaky and that useful.
Yeah, that is really sneaky.
All right. Well, you know what else is sneaky is being a dictator of the world for 4,000 years.
Actually, there's nothing sneaky about that.
I guess not really.
It's the antithesis of sneaky.
So this is our kicker this week, and it comes from Ars Technica, who reported on a Reddit reader who has been playing Civilization 2 for over a decade. A single.
That's amazing.
Just to kind of see what would happen. What is the Civilization 2 apocalypse? And it turns out it's very, very nuclear. So the whole world is broken down into three factions, and he controls one of them, and they are basically just nuclear bombing the crap out of each other to the point where 90% of the world's population has died. And everyone is just starving in a nuclear irradiated swamp.
Yikes. Well, can it ever end? Can the world end in Civilization 2?
I don't know. I do not know. But it's pretty crazy to see that he's been playing it this far. And he was forced to abolish democracy just in order to save his own kingdom.
Ouch. That's a bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now it makes me think about other video games and what would happen if you let them play for 10 years. Like, what if you played The Sims for 10 years, for example?
Well, the Sims, at least, the first few generations of The Sims and SimCity, I believe, have all been played to their logical end.
Oh, they do have a logical end? They don't just keep going?
Yeah, most of them do. I mean, some of them kind of keep going, but they reach a stasis. And that seems to be what's happened here in Civilization 2. Anyway, if you want to learn more about this crazy computer-generated post-apocalyptic wasteland, the game has developed its own Reddit thread.
Very cool. Well, thanks for sharing that one. That was good. So I guess that'll do it for the end user this week. That was a lot of fun. Lots of Apple news. You won't get another one of these for a while, so.
We might. You never know. There's still other Apple pieces to update.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, if you'd like to get in contact with us, Taylor, what is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is at TaylorPhone. Chris, what is your Twitter handle?
I'm at Chris Hale Barnes.
Are you not following me, Chris? That's kind of awkward.
No, I think I'm following you, unless I got bit by the Twitter unfollow bug or something like that.
That's not a real thing. It's just something people say when they unfollow me.
Exactly. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have a look at Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and The Movie Podcast. You can also send us some feedback at theendusr@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can ping us on Twitter. We are at @TheEndUser, both of us. You can join us live in the chat room every Thursday night as we broadcast at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I am your host and producer, Chris Brown.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
look on my work, seeing mighty and despair.